back to the Rat Chat. Today we are going to be interviewing Blakely Lockhart, grad student at BT and a policy ambassador for neuroscience.
So I can go ahead and start with the first question.
Sure.
I was wondering, so how would you describe kind of what you do and what you're passionate about?
Yeah. So right now, what I do is I'm a grad student. I'm in the Translational Biology, Medicine, and Health program at Virginia Tech. That's a really long name, so we call it TBMH. And essentially what it boils down to meaning is that whatever we look at in our researching, say at a bench side, like a lab bench, you know, picture the white coat, pipetting, yeah. Right? That's me. Whatever we do there, how do we look at how it translates to the community for broader impact? So even if we're looking at something really, really small, making sure that we're looking long-term at the significance and the impact that it can have. So yeah, I'm 2 years into my four-year program in my PhD program, and I am passionate about neuroscience, of course, but I'm also passionate about public policy and where they intersect. So science communication is what I'm passionate about.
That's wonderful. And so, like, you mentioned working in a lab with a coat and things like that. Yeah. Can you walk us with more detail through what a typical day in your life would look like?
So I work in the maternal influence on neurodevelopment lab. So we study how do moms impact their baby's growth and neurodevelopment. What we look at is all different sorts of factors that influence baby's neurodevelopment through neurodevelopment. That does mean we're actually MRI scanning babies.
Oh, wow.
We do that through non-sedated sleep. So I am really good at putting babies to sleep. Then we put a ton of ear protection on them so that they can't hear anything, because MRIs are really loud, right? Mm-hmm. It's a big magnet that just makes a ton of noise. And then we scan them while they're asleep. So my majority of my day is actually doing scanning for infants, but when I'm in the wet lab, I look at human milk. And so we get samples from mom, and I study it for different macronutrients and micronutrient and bioactive composition.
You want to tell me, like, something that you found through this research? What's something about this research that, like, really excites you?
What really excites me is the larger impact that this can have. So specifically, and hopefully we'll publish on this shortly, what we started to find in a pilot study is that specific bioactive components, what we call exosomes, which are these really, really small vesicles that are in human milk. They contain microRNA, so messenger RNA that controls gene expression post-transcriptionally. And what we're starting to look at is how does this influence growth? And what we actually found is that in colostrum, which is the first milk that's produced by mom, like day of baby being born, that milk and the composition in that actually seems to be predictive of brain growth in babies.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's really cool.
That's amazing.
And now I have more questions, you know, as a scientist. Now that we found this out, now I have so many more questions.
For sure. So then kind of switching over to the other side of what you do, we were kind of wondering, what is running for the House of Delegates like?
Oh my gosh, that was a crazy experience.
Really?
So I ran for the former 56th District in the Virginia House of Delegates, which, right, we have a House of Delegates and we have a Senate. I say former because it's all been redistricted now, but it was outside of Richmond area, Henrico County and Goochland and Louisa, and all the way up to Spotsylvania, actually. It was a really large district. And I ran right out of undergrad. So I got my degree in neuroscience, and then I was asked to run. So I was the youngest person in Virginia to run. For the record, you can run at the age of 21. I was 22.
Oh my God. Wow.
And what made it different was that my whole campaign was also young. My campaign manager was actually a freshman here at Virginia Tech at the time. So he was coming back and forth, like, to Richmond for me, which was really special, and I thank him all the time. So very grateful. Anyway, so what we did is we ran to break the mold of who runs, right? I was so young as a young woman. And so we just came in to try and change things up. And what I did is I brought a science perspective to that, right? So I'm looking at, okay, here's a problem in our community. How am I going to look at this differently? And so what do? I research. That's my background.
Right.
So I do a deep dive, you know, create my own hypothesis for maybe what would work as a solution. And then going into the community and being like, hey, would this work? Or am I making an assumption that I shouldn't be making? So we did that. We shook it up. We turned out voters. We increased it by 40%, which I was super proud of. And we got a lot of young people involved. I had 10 high school interns just a lot. But I was so excited because it, you know, you don't have to be able to vote in order to be civically engaged and excited about our government. So it was really cool experience to do that. And we mainly were focused on health literacy. So that science communication, because it was 2021 pandemic, right? The vaccine had just come out. People didn't have internet access. We were trying to tackle things from all different sides.
Sure.
So that's what we were focused on.
That's amazing, though, that you were able to bring like that science perspective.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're right. When I look at the government, there's not a lot of that.
It's not. That's where we have some problems.
For sure.
And just being young, we have different ways of doing things.
Absolutely.
And just because it's different doesn't mean it's wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of students feel like they have to choose between science or government. Mm-hmm. How did you end up sort of combining both in your career, and how did that mixing process sort of look like?
Yeah, it was a little challenging because, right, it's not typically done, but I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think looking at things from an interdisciplinary background is a strength, actually, because you can look at the bigger picture of something. And so it started, I think, in college because I studied neuroscience, but I also studied leadership. And that's when I started to see, there's some overlap in things, right? I wanted to know why the brain does certain things. And then how does that translate to what our current leaders do, right?
Yeah.
So that's where it kind of started. And I've been trying to make sure that I combine it ever since, right? So when I'm looking at something that is a community health problem, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking through it from a scientific background of looking for evidence of different things. And then once again, a lot of science is also trial and error. So test one thing, test another, and pose different questions. So right now, I'm trying to look at what I do with my research for a larger impact, of course, of how would that change a policy that we recommend to, say, moms about feeding or what they could do. Can we support our moms in feeding? Maybe more time off is a good thing for moms when they give birth.
What's something about the intersection of neuroscience and public policy that most people might not realize?
I think it's just the overlap. I think most people just think of them completely separate and distinct, right? And like anything, there's overlap always, right?
Sure.
In the theories that we learn about. And as I said, that testing of different policies, that exploration part, which maybe should be done more in our government,
is
going through and researching before proposing a policy. So yeah, there's some overlap.
Yeah, because to me specifically, like, I'm actually this weekend after school today, I'm leaving for a state debate competition.
Nice!
So okay. I've been also really interested in how to combine, you know, policy and science and things like that. And you're right, when I go to colleges and I'm like, hey, what kind of path can I take to combine this? And they're like, I don't know. So, yeah.
And so you kind of have to make it your own. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did in undergrad. And then now, right, I chose a translational program on purpose, right? It's just gone for a neuroscience program and been really specific in that. But I wanted to know, what are the steps that it would take to translate it to the community? What if I wanted to go into industry? What if I wanted to like patent something and build it and commercialize it, right? So what are the different options? And so looking for where things connect. And then also your academic journey is your own. So build it, right? You don't get, if you're not getting something, go out and find somebody who's done it before. Or maybe there's, you know, an internship you could do in a completely different area that can give you those skills that you would need.
And that's some really good advice. Thank you.
See, I'm really interested in what you're doing because for college, I'm actually going to study international relations with World Health.
Nice.
And I want to do a double major with biology to sort of, I guess, kind of gear myself to where you are right now. You're doing the research, maybe an MD, PhD, something like that. So my question for you is, for high school students who do love both things like science and something else like government, art, politics, writing, history, what advice would you give to them from both an educational standpoint and just in general?
Definitely look for those opportunities that overlap, right? So I think it's not usually traditionally posed to you, so you may not know about them. And so this is where having really good mentors comes in, and you just start asking, hey, so for instance, for art, right? Say I'm really interested in art and science. Where is that overlap and where does it exist? Maybe I'm going to go to an art mentor that I have and ask about it. You could do things such as our textbooks, right? They have tons of drawings in them, right? That's a really cool place to overlap because you need a scientist who understands how, you know, whatever mechanism is being portrayed And you could maybe draw that, right?
Oh my God, I was watching like a video one time and it was about this person. She's like, I think she's in college. I don't know if it's undergrad or graduate, but her whole like major and her whole like career is geared towards like drawing for textbooks. Yes. Like she goes into a surgery and what she does is she draws the surgical procedure. And I just think that's really cool. No matter what two fields you're interested in, there's probably always going to be an intersection point you just have to find.
Exactly. And it's not just well known. And that's the problem that I think stops a lot of people from pursuing something further. And that's when asking people, being curious about things is your biggest strength. So always keep asking. And then once again, as your skills develop, see where that takes you, right? Maybe you're really good at just conceptualizing something, visualizing it, and drawing it out, right? That is a skill, okay? Not everybody can do that, but it's needed to take an idea and draw it out. So it could be a really useful tool. You never know how it could be used in the future. So
where do you see your career heading next? Maybe after you graduate from graduate school, do you imagine staying more on the research side, policy side, or blending them both together?
I'm hoping to blend them. I know traditionally it's one or the other, and I've been, you know, told, of course, you gotta pick one. And I just don't think I need to choose. I think my strongest asset is this bridge of skills, this science communication that I was talking about that I've developed over the past couple years from running for office, from presenting at conferences. So I'm hoping that, yeah, maybe I'll have my own lab and stay in academia, but always, always looking for that broader impact, always looking at how am I going to be involved in my local community, right? Maybe it's going and attending city council meetings and then informing them of the research that I'm doing right now, or going to a national organization such as SFN, an international one, and talking about those findings and talking with our congressional members and elevating it further.
Now, technically, that's the end of our questions, but I have a little bit more.
Oh, of course.
So I'm kind of interested in what was your journey to get to where you are? How did you know that you wanted to do these things? And when did you sort of realize it was possible?
Realizing it was possible? I'm still not even sure about that, right? I think I'm still trying to figure that out right now. But once again, being open to different kinds of opportunities as they present themselves, right? So when I was in undergrad, very much science heavy, I was in two labs doing research. But then the opportunity presented itself to reactivate our NAACP on CNU's campus. And that launched me into a different kind of activism that I hadn't done, but I'm still using my communication skills from practicing presenting at conferences and writing papers, right? And so being open to what presents itself, then graduating and getting a phone call saying, hey, will you run for office? And me going, can I do that? Is that allowed? And then just taking that leap and saying, yes, sure. And making it your own, right? So these different situations as they pop up, maybe it's not ever, you know, they're not all perfect by any means. And it's okay to say no to things, of course. As things come up, just being willing to flex in different ways and explore something, even for a short time, right? You don't have to commit to everything 100%, but just trying something new and seeing if you gain some skills from that.
Could you elaborate more on, you said you got a phone call asking you to run. I'm so curious as to what was the process to getting there? Like, were you working with an organization? What were you doing?
No, actually. So as I mentioned, I reactivated the NAACP on campus, and that launched me into a different kind of activism. And when I was looking at broader impact for that activism, I was calling news crews, right? I was making sure that our news knew what was happening and that we were having these conversations with the communities, different community stakeholders, like our local members, our local police, right? Our university administration, our staff, our students, making sure that we're all coming together and having productive conversations. And I think it's from there, because there was a couple of news articles that came out, that's how I got on the radar for a couple of people. And so, yeah, they just were like, would you be willing to do this? And I asked for, you know, how much time do I have to think about it? And I had a couple of days, actually, before all the signatures needed to be in. So, you know, perks of being young, I was like, sure, why not? Let's see where it takes me. I literally graduated and then this happened. I graduated in December and I was asked in February, I think. Yeah.
So you graduated from Christopher Newport?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, where are you studying now? This is kind of off topic. I'm just curious because it's not on the document anywhere.
Where I'm studying right now? Here in Roanoke, actually. At the Fralin Biomedical Research Institute.
Oh, you're with Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Oh, yeah, that's how I found her. I was contacting like the podcast guy at ET, and he recommended me to you. And I'm really glad he did because you're such a cool person.
So interesting.
Thank you. The article just came out. So I thought that's what happened about SFN, that I'm an ambassador for that. So, yeah. Combining science and policy.
Do you guys have any more questions?
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, what is SFN?
Yes, we talked about that really briefly. It's the Society for Neuroscience. So it's one of the largest organizations of neuroscientists. It's about 30,000 people, I think. And it's really cool because it's its own, you know, independent. It's not funded by the government or anything, where we all get to come together at an annual meeting and talk everything science that you could ever think of with neuroscience, all different disciplines of that. And so I applied for a policy fellowship, and that's what I get to do for the next 10 months. I'm being trained in science policy, advocacy, and communication. And so I just did a congressional hill day. So I talked with our Congress members here for this area. And was talking about, hey, you need to keep funding biomedical research. It's really, really important to do that. And also, you need to support things like the safe and ethical use of animals.
I think you were talking about the lobbying.
Essentially
that's what I'm hearing. Are you sort of like a lobbyist? Is there a difference between you and them?
Kind of, but also not, right? We're not really pushing as hard as some of the lobbyists. That's your full-time job when you're a lobbyist, right? But being more neutral, and we also have it's like one day we have a Congressional Hill Week, essentially, but for our state of Virginia, we had it all in one day where we met with everybody, and then we reach back out frequently to actually ask for them to come and have lab tours and get to see the science, because I think it's a lot easier for people to conceptualize what we're talking about if you can actually see it.
I just being this reading this book, it's called The Emperor of All Maladies. Mm-hmm. It focused really heavily on the role of how government affects science, and they were advocating for cancer research. Is there anything, any research in particular you advocate for or something like that?
Yeah, so for this program right now, or this ambassadorship, it's not a specific one thing, but instead we're looking at neuroscience as a whole. So we're advocating for the continued funding of things like the Brain Initiative that have existed for the past couple of years, and we need to continue that initiative. Otherwise, you know, research will come to a halt. And so that's, you know, one example. As I mentioned, also we're lobbying or advocating. I use the word advocating more because, once again,
bit of a better connotation.
And I also don't even want to detract from the lobbyists, right? Like, they work so hard. So I'm an advocate. And we advocate for the safe and ethical use of animal models, which we already have so many protections in place for right now, but often it can get misconstrued. And we want to make sure that our congressional members know that we do have a lot of rules and protections in place already, and here's how it plays out.
I remember seeing something about the monkeys.
Yes, yeah.
So that's really important right now with all the idea of like the over budget and everything floating around. So.
Exactly. And what does that actually look like? Because once again, in the middle of certain projects, terminating those projects will, you know, result in deficits in certain research areas. So that was our third ask. Our congressional members, of course, is to halt the destabilizing activities, because unfortunately that is going to stall us in our progress forward, and, you know, we'll fall behind in terms of our global position right now with, you know, biomedical research.
Does the Society of Neuroscience work with other scientific focus groups?
Yeah, partner with a whole bunch of them. Just one. But at least, and so it was actually kind of cool because we all came together for the SFN Hill Day. So there was a lot of people who have been involved in multiple different, whether you're at an institute or industry level or, you know, just an activism group. We all came together and, you know, for our state, we're able to present this information and ask for specific funding, of course. So it's kind of great because you have all different backgrounds and different perspectives coming together, which I think makes the argument that, hey, you do need to fund this even stronger, because if we're all saying this, then it needs to happen. Yeah.
It's like power in numbers.
Exactly, exactly, yeah.
So I guess my last question, I think, unless I think of anything else, mm-hmm. is how would you tell young people to, what would you encourage them to do to become more civically involved?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways. And I think it's intimidating when you just outright hear something like, get civically engaged. Okay, that's intimidating. But it can be anything from joining an email list so you know about local events that are happening and know about the local campaigns that are happening, because local elections matter.
Thank you.
I just want to put that out there.
As someone who comes from a county with something called Trump Town in it, I'd say local elections
matter.
They were trying to rename the town. It was hilarious. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, local elections matter. Please, please care.
Thankfully, the guy didn't get elected.
And so we can move with that. But so often it's just joining different email lists so you know what's going on. Definitely check out different campaign websites even just to see, hey, what are the issues that are being brought up? One thing that I always advise is you can go to a city council meeting and just sit in. Actually, they'll probably notice you because you'll be the youngest person in there, but you know, there's time for open discussion in, you know, these different meetings, and so you can share your opinions, or you know, if you have something really meaningful to bring up that would add mm-hmm. to whatever decision is being voted on, please do, right? Your voice still matters, right? Even if you're young, it still matters. And hey, once again, just because something's been done in a certain way for many years doesn't mean it's the right way to do it. So doing that, you can volunteer for campaigns, right? Like, absolutely. You can knock doors. You can write. I had people writing postcards left and right, writing thank you notes, even for the donors for my campaign, just to make sure that every single person got thanked because it meant a lot to me. So there's lots of different ways that you can get involved. It just depends on the degree of how you want to be involved, because I know it can be intimidating. It was intimidating for me.
That sounds intimidating. Thank you so much for coming. Is there anything you want to say or any closing note that you want to leave off on that we haven't talked about?
Not really. Just I thank you guys for being interested, and remember to, you know, flex in different ways as opportunities present itself, and then see where, you know, that overlap exists, or maybe you have to make that space yourself. And if that needs to happen, do it. You'll have people that'll support you, me being one of them.
Thank you so much. You are such a cool person. I cannot emphasize that enough.
Thank you. I'm so excited you guys are interested in science and policy and overlap. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your time. Of course. I will not keep you any longer because I'm not sure what you have to do today. So, yeah.